This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and we're your connection to local music and more. And the program today will cover two of the many, many, many holiday offerings throughout our area, one of which is the Champaign-Urbana Symphony's holiday concert this Thursday evening at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Joe Dingy, who is executive director of the symphony, is with us for this first portion of the show. And then Springfield Ballet Company is presenting The Nutcracker this weekend, their 35th annual production of The Nutcracker. And artistic director Julie Ratz will be with me in the later part of the show. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was music by Georges Bizet from his L'Arlésienne suite, from incidental music to a play called of that name. The famous, I played the wrong thing. I wondered the whole thing sounded wrong to me this morning. Anyway, we'll get to the other thing later on, but it's fine. This was from the Carmen suite, The Mounted Guard, the movement there from Carmen by Georges Bizet, the Bastille Orchestra led by Myung-Won Chung. Trying to get various things ready for the program today, and not entirely successful. Before we begin with our conversation with Joe Dingy of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, we need to do this test of the emergency alert system. So this is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and it's your connection to local music today, and dance, for that matter. Later on in the program, we'll be talking with Julie Ratz, who is artistic director of the Springfield Ballet Company, about their performances of The Nutcracker this weekend. But first, Joe Dingy, who's executive director of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, is with us this morning. Well, I guess it's not morning. It's noontime. And the CU Symphony's holiday concert is on Thursday at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Welcome to the program, Joe.
Well, thanks for having me.
And has this become a holiday tradition for a while now, the holiday concert?
It is. There's been, obviously, we've got 50 years of holiday concerts, but I think that in the last 5 years, it's really sort of started cementing into a tradition of holiday pops and a mixture of choral music and the orchestral favorites from the season.
And this is at the Krannert Center, right?
Yes, it is.
Because you have done it at the Virginia Theater sometimes.
We have done it at the Virginia. For the last 3 years, we've done it in Follinger Great Hall.
And makes things logistically much easier.
Especially when you have huge choruses.
Which you do this year. You have a couple of guest choruses.
Yes, we do. We have the Chorale, led by Julie Beiler, and we have the Parkland Singers, led by Barbara Zakow.
Are they singing separately, together, or both?
They will be singing together, and there'll be almost 150 folks in the choral balcony. And if you've sat in Krannert Center and you've seen the choral balcony filled, it's quite an awesome sight, not to mention the sound that just projects out of there. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I hadn't realized that the two choruses combined were so large. I guess I'm not sure how big the Parkland Singers are. Is that the bigger chorus?
Actually, I think the chorale is bigger. I want to say that the chorale is 75 plus, and then the Parkland Singers fluctuates a little bit, but that's usually on average, I think, about 65 plus when they pull everybody together.
Well, I'll have to ask Julie Beiler when she's here in a week or so to talk about their the chorale's annual New Year's Eve concert, which is at the Virginia. So maybe I remember to ask her that question. I should know by now, but I forget. So they're joining the orchestra for what pieces?
Well, we actually have three choral pieces that we'll be doing. We'll be doing two suites from The Many Moods of Christmas, and then the Chorale and the Parkland Singers will also join us for 12 Days of Christmas. In addition, we'll be doing a sing-along, which will include everybody. And that'll also include the choruses. That's sort of the highlight and one of everybody's favorite things of the evening. And that will be a Christmas sing-along arranged by Lucas Richmond.
And, of course, the audience just adding to the mass choir there.
Exactly.
So depends how much you sing and how many of you there are out there, just how big a chorus it'll be. The bigger, the better.
So far, knock on wood, it seems like we have a great house. The numbers were really good yesterday.
Good. So Steve Larson, of course, is your music director, and he was a bit under the weather this morning, or he'd probably be with us right now. He has arranged something that looks rather interesting that on paper, I don't get the concept of, a Titanic Hallelujah.
Okay.
Meaning,
I was at the rehearsal last night, so I can give you a little anecdotal story, but we would have to go to Steve for the correct one. Apparently, one day Steve was whistling Mahler's symphony to himself, and then all of a sudden, all of a sudden he realized that he was actually doing Handel's Messiah. So I think he decided to sit down and play around, and he's actually taken excerpts and bits and pieces and sort of interwoven them together, and It was really kind of inspiring last night to hear the orchestra do it, even though it was just in the orchestra rehearsal room and it was their first time running it through. But apparently, there may be some folks out there that kind of remember this, because Steve mentioned, and it's before my tenure at the CUSO, but I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, they did an early version of this. The one they'll be doing on Thursday night is based on that, but a little more refined. Steve's taken some time and played around with it a little bit more.
I'm trying to go run through in my head some of the tunes from Mahler's First Symphony. That's sometimes nicknamed the Titan Symphony.
Exactly.
Hence the Titanic Hallelujah. And I'm going to have to work on this to come up with one of the tunes that might resemble anything from the Hallelujah Chorus. I'm just not coming up with anything.
Well, just go to the concert and be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. Well, I played, as your introduction, erroneously, some music from the Carmen Suite of Georges Bizet. I really meant to play something from the L'Arlésienne Suite, because you're doing a couple of movements from there.
We are. And when you do a holiday concert, you want to be so inclusive. Obviously, we are the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, so even though the holiday concert is usually a pops concert, we like to keep the orchestral component. And that's one of the pieces of feedback we've got every year. And these are just, you know, delightful little pieces and definitely full of holiday spirit. So
maybe this would be, you know, this would probably be a question for Steve, or maybe I should even know the answer to this, but I'm not really sure why these particular tunes got associated with Christmas, because there's nothing about Christmas in the play, L'Arlésienne.
No, but they're sort of, I guess the best analogy would be they're definitely appropriate for the soundtrack of Christmas. So,
well, with any luck, I have actually queued them up properly this time. These are two movements from L'Arlésienne by Georges Bizet. One is called the Carillon, which, as many listeners will know, is a type of bell. And in fact, on the University of Illinois campus, we have a new Carillon to add to the one in the, now I'm forgetting the name of the math building, where the old one was. And some of you have heard the new one termed the Eye of Sauron, which is kind of interesting, architecturally speaking, visually speaking. And then also the Farandole. Both of these gotten associated with Christmas somehow or another. The Bastille Orchestra, led by Myung-Won Chung, here on Live and Local.
We'll be right back.
don't think that's supposed to be the end of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony concert on Thursday night, but it certainly could be a nice ending if it were a purely orchestral concert. That was the Farandole, and before we heard that, the Carillon movement from L'Arlésienne of Georges Bizet. Both of those tunes will be on the CU Symphony's holiday concert Thursday night at the Krannert Center in Urbana. This performance was by the Bastille Orchestra, conducted by Myung-Won Chung, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. And we'll be right back with Joe Dingy of the CU Symphony about that concert. And coming up later this hour, Julie Ratz, Artistic Director of the Springfield Ballet Company. Support for our broadcast today comes in part from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, celebrating their 10th anniversary at 6th and University in Champaign, now through December 13th. World Harvest features imported chocolates, cookies, cheeses, gift baskets, and party catering. Also through the holidays, daily food tastings with an expanded tasting on Saturdays. So, Joe, do you have any idea? I think it's sort of normal in these Pops concerts where the orchestra tends to have fewer rehearsals, and yet I've heard that it can actually be rather more difficult to put together sometimes because you have all these little short pieces. And have you heard Steve talk about that, Steve Larson, who conducts the symphony?
Well, I think we've all talked about it in the office. It's true that there are fewer rehearsals typically for a classical concert. In the Great Hall, we would have four rehearsals and then the performance. For this one, we'll have two rehearsals. The orchestra rehearsed last night. Tonight, we will rehearse with the choruses, and we'll actually be doing one number with Ron Hedlund, who's a fabulous bass baritone soloist. And it is just getting all of those people together and scheduling everything so that you get the most efficient use of time, you know, because you really only have 2.5 hours to rehearse with everybody. And there are so many questions that come up. So there's a lot more email communication in advance. There's a lot more planning, seating charts. How do you get 150 choral members up and down two flights of stairs and in and out of the choral balcony efficiently? Certain people have special needs and they need to be met beforehand so that you're not dealing with the issue on site. And something that normally might not be a problem in a rehearsal because you have an extra 5 minutes, really, when we have these rehearsals, there are no extra 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
So everything has to run like clockwork.
It's the sort of thing that as a conductor would drive me nuts, is all that detail planning.
Well, hopefully staff takes care of a lot of that. So, but it is rigorous and it's hard for everybody, but ultimately it's rewarding because I think it is one of the most crowd-pleasing and fun concerts we do all year. So.
Sure. Have you noticed that for usually you do a couple of Pops concerts a year now, I think.
We typically do a few. I think for the last couple of years, it's basically settled into two. It had almost been three, where we were doing one in the fall, the holiday concert, and then one again in the spring. This year, we did our Symphony at Sunset concert out in Dodds Park in association with the Champaign Park District. We have the holiday concert coming up on Thursday. And really, we don't have a quote-unquote Pops concert in the spring this season. We kind of replaced it because it's our 50th anniversary with a gala that we'll actually be doing in April at the iHotel. And that'll be a Viennese ball, actually.
Oh, yes, I remember reading about
and,
that.
And that is not an actual reenactment, but sort of a recreation of the very first fundraiser that was ever done for the CU Symphony.
Wow, that should be splendid. So are you finding, we had a conversation with Steve and one of your founding board members,
Gil Papp,
yeah, some weeks ago, about the whole 50th anniversary thing. Are you finding good enthusiasm and increased audiences so far because of the enthusiasm this year? Just curious.
It's kind of fun. I would say as a general rule, and this is probably true of all businesses, when you come up to an anniversary, sometimes it's almost more important to you than it is to the outside world. But so many people in the community were important and involved and even critical at different points in our 50-year history that it's nice to reconnect with all those people and to celebrate them we've been doing a series of articles on the history in the newsletter as it comes out every other month. And that's been a sort of a personal favorite for me, is sort of delving into the scrapbooks and the newspaper clippings and putting it together into a little story. And I would have to say that it really has re-energized our patron base. Audiences have been growing. I think that this holiday concert audience will be the biggest one in quite some years. And we just did our annual fund, and the donations are coming in well, and that's in partial recognition of the 50th anniversary. And it just seems like people are coming out of the woodwork and sort of remembering the time that they really spent with us and then coming back. So it's been very nice. In addition, I'm also constantly surprised by the number of people who didn't know that the CU Symphony was around for 50 years and have said that, oh, that was always one of those things I meant to do, and now they're calling us and getting tickets. So
yeah, that's great to hear. Here's a sample. Actually, I'm not going to play any part of the suite that you guys are actually performing. Robert Russell Bennett, along with Robert Shaw, have arranged quite a number of traditional carols into what they four suites that they call the Many Moods of Christmas. And I think you said you're doing the first and third of those suites.
Yes.
And so here's part of the fourth. I don't want to give anything away, but this will give a good idea of the wonderful melding of orchestra and chorus that these guys have done. We're going to come right in the middle of this suite, right before a carol that I'm sure most of our listeners will recognize, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Wow, so that was the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra and Chorus led by Robert Shaw in Robert Russell Bennett's fourth suite of his Many Moods of Christmas, and the first and third suites will be on the concert, the holiday concert by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony with the Chorale and the Parkland Singers this Thursday evening at the Krannert Center. And Joe Dingy, who's the executive director of the symphony, is with me here on Live and Local. And Joe, I'd forgotten, because I haven't heard those in so long, just how thrilling the Many Moods of Christmas can be. And you said you were, you haven't had a choral rehearsal yet.
Have not had the choral rehearsal. That's tonight. But it is thrilling, and it's exciting. It's almost overwhelming. And like I said, once you get 150-plus folks up in that choral balcony, it's visually just arresting. And then the sound that just comes out. Follinger Great Hall is famous for its sound. But, you know, you get the choral singers up there, and it's just a whole different experience. And all of the carols that are in the Many Moods of Christmas, they're all perfect for the holiday. So they are wonderful pieces of music.
And at least looking at the titles of them here, I certainly recognize all of them. Occasionally you'll find suites where they use some that are less familiar, but these Bennett pulled out all the famous ones.
He did. It's sort of a greatest hits of Christmas.
So you said there's going to be a sing-along, but I imagine the audience will probably have trouble not singing along during those medleys as well.
I think so. That's a lot of fun, the sing-along. It's a Christmas sing-along, the piece that we'll actually be performing. It's very much the same way. They're all very well-known pieces of Christmas music, popular holiday carols, and ends with Deck the Halls. So it's there'll be lyrics in the program, but I don't think anybody will have any problem just singing along just from memory.
So at the end of Deck the Halls, are you going to drop red and green streamers from the balconies or something?
I think we had to cut that out of the budget this year.
Well, I think it's going to be a great celebratory concert, no matter what comes out of the balconies, if anything. But what your hope, of course, is to fill them with people.
Exactly. I hope everybody can come. It is a true highlight of the season for us, and I hope for everybody else, too.
Right, Thursday night, 7:30, Krannert Center in Urbana. For information, you can buy tickets from the Krannert Center. Just go to their web address. It's krannertcenter. I always forget it's com or org, but you can find it either way. Or lots of information and buy tickets as well on the Champaign-Urbana Symphony's website, which is cusymphony.org. And Joe mentioned earlier that they've been in their newsletter writing various articles on the 50th anniversary and the whole history of the symphony, and I believe all those show up on the website.
Yes, we have all those on the website too.
Yeah, some really, it's really great to read, fascinating actually to read the origins and the
It is
process.
Very fun.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe, for coming in.
Well, thank you so much.
And coming up next, I just turned my microphone down. Coming up next on Live and Local, Julie Ratz, who's artistic director of the Springfield Ballet Company, will be talking about their 35th annual performances this weekend of The Nutcracker. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. The Overture 2, Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker, played by the London Symphony Orchestra, led by Sir Charles McCarris. Coming up in just a moment, a conversation with the Springfield Ballet's artistic director about their performances of The Nutcracker this weekend. Our programs today on Live and Local are made possible by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, presenting the CU Symphony Holiday Concert on Thursday, December 10th at 7:30 p.m. in the Great Hall of the Krannert Center. The symphony rings in the holidays with the chorale and the Parkland Singers. I'll have a short calendar for you at the top of the hour, right before our weather forecast and the news headlines at 101, classical music at 106. Springfield Ballet Company's performances of The Nutcracker are this Saturday at 11 in the morning, and I'm not looking at my Sunday calendar, but I'll give you those complete details. After my conversation with Julie Ratz, who is the artistic director and has been for some years of the Springfield Ballet Company. Well, before we actually talk about the ballet itself, I was just curious about this one item in your own biography, this fellowship in exercise physiology and cardiac rehabilitation.
Yes, that is true.
How does that fit into what you're doing now?
It doesn't.
Not at all.
Well, it does a little bit. I mean, the truth is that I think my training in physiology helps me be a better ballet teacher because I understand the body and how it works.
Yeah, what made you decide to do that?
I was in Chicago. I graduated from ISU. I was in Chicago taking dance classes, and I've sort of just felt like I needed to get another degree, and I really wanted to be a physical therapist. But I volunteered at the Rehab Institute in Chicago at Northwestern University, and I couldn't take it. I mean, it was just too sad for me to see people injured. And most of the people that I worked with there were young men about my age that had been in car accidents. And, you know, they were quadriplegics. And I'm not a strong enough person to do that. So the next, closest thing, working with the body and physical activity and things like that was this program they had at Northeastern, exercise physiology and cardiac rehabilitation. And so I went there and I finished all my coursework and I got a full scholarship and a fellowship and I worked in the lab and I did stress testing on people. We used to test all the Chicago policemen and firefighters and stuff. And I finished my coursework. I hadn't written my thesis when I got the job offer from Springfield Ballet. And so I do not have a master's degree because I didn't write my thesis, but I do have my dream job instead.
Your dream job with the ballet?
Yes.
Yeah, so what brought you back to ballet? I mean, what made you decide to do
that? Well, I was always dancing, and I was always taking class, and it's what I wanted to do with my life, and it was what my bachelor's degree was in, and I was just kind of biding my time in Chicago taking classes, trying to dance, but when the position of ballet mistress opened in Springfield, and Grace Nanavati hired me to, come back, I could be near my parents, and I could work with these exceptional young people, and I could teach ballet, and it's what I wanted to do. So I got very lucky, because jobs in dance are few and far between. So I got lucky, it was the right time, and it all worked out for me.
So what is ballet masters?
A ballet mistress is like the assistant to the director, and if it's a woman, it's called a ballet mistress, and if it's a man, it's called a ballet master. It's just a title.
And compared with the artistic director, which you now are, how do the various roles differ?
Well, the artistic director is responsible for the vision of the company, you know, long-range planning, deciding what the company is going to be in 5 years, also what ballets we're going to do, hiring the guest artists, setting the choreography. And the ballet mistress doesn't have that responsibility. Their responsibility is really in the training of the company and then kind of cleaning up rehearsals. They do some choreography, but they mostly assist what the artistic director is doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but you're still very much hands-on with all that.
Yeah, very much. Yeah, of course, I choreograph the ballets, and my ballet mistress helps, too. So, you know, we split things up. Like in the Nutcracker, she choreographed the bonbons and the Arabian and the angels, and then I do, you know, the other stuff. I try not to just, you know, pass off on her what I don't want to do. We try to split it up so that, you know, she gets to do some interesting things. I was lucky when I was the ballet mistress because Grace had a plan to retire in 5 years. So she groomed me from the time I started to take over for her.
As the artistic director.
Yeah.
What is the range of ages of dancers in the program, in the company?
Well, in the company, you have to be 13. So we have open auditions for dancers 13 years old and up in the spring of every year. And so all the dancers in the company are 13 years old or older. However, we have a training program for 10 to 13-year-olds. And then in the Nutcracker, we have open auditions for kids 8 years old and up. So in the Nutcracker, there are some younger kids that aren't actually in the company. You know, they're dancing at local studios. We have 120 people in the cast, 75 extra kids, plus the 30 company members, and then some adult theater actors.
So what's the upper age of the company?
The upper age of the company is upper 20s at this point.
So, and are these folks who have been through the program and stuck around, or a lot who have just come to work with the company specifically?
Both. I mean, we have some dancers who are, you know, who are in college. We have some that have gone to college and come back to dance with us. We have Gina, who's a ballet mistress, who grew up dancing here and is now working for the company. So we have a broad range. Most of the dancers in the company are high school kids.
And therefore in the production of the Nutcracker as well.
Correct. Well, yeah.
How about the lead dancers for that performance?
Well, interestingly, the lead dancers, we are bringing back two girls who used to be Springfield Ballet Company members and are now dancing professionally in ballet companies. Erica Wesselman, who's going to be the Snow Queen, is dancing with Carolina Ballet Theater. And then Elizabeth Chapman, who's going to do the Sugar Plum Fairy, is with Georgia Ballet. And they were both my students, and they were both in the Springfield Ballet Company all through high school. And now they're professional ballerinas, so we're bringing them back for our 35th anniversary production to perform, which is kind of neat. And then we have a couple of guys, a guy named Shane Omer, who used to be with Pacific Northwest Ballet and Le Grand Ballet Canadien, and he's a New York dancer now. He's coming to do the Nutcracker Prince. And Sam Chester from Carolina Ballet, who's been here a lot as a guest artist, is going to be the Cavalier in Snow King. And Todd Keach from Chicago is going to be Arabian. I've got two guest guys from Millikan University. I got to teach at Millikan for 8 weeks this year when their ballet teacher was on maternity leave, and so I got to recruit a couple of guys from Millikan to come dance with us. So that's kind of neat.
So except for those Millikan, the males are imports, essentially.
Imports, yes.
They haven't had experience with Springfield Ballet except as guests.
Except as guest artists, correct.
Do you do, is there an orchestra, live orchestra with
there
you?
There is not. We had the Illinois Symphony Orchestra for quite a few years, and we used to get a grant for that, and as I'm sure you know, grants for arts organizations have all but gone away, and we just cannot afford to hire the symphony for the Nutcracker as much as we would like to.
That's an expensive proposition.
It's very expensive. Yeah, it's about $25,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big add-on.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I ask, what is the production cost overall?
The production cost overall, about $60,000.
Yeah, that's a big show. But
it's
you have a good audience, I imagine.
We have a great audience. You know, it can always be bigger. That house at Sangamon Auditorium holds 2,000 people.
That's a huge
hall. So there's always room for more. We don't have to worry about selling out the Nutcracker, but we would like to see bigger crowds. I mean, I realize it's an expensive ticket, and when you have a family to try to bring everybody to that, it costs a lot of money, but it's a great show, and it's well worth the price when you think about the extravagance of the sets and costumes and all the work that went into it.
Julie Ratz, artistic director of the Springfield Ballet Company, about their performances of the Nutcracker. This weekend, Saturday at 2 and 8 o'clock, and Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois in Springfield. We'll continue that conversation, which actually took place on the telephone yesterday. Right after this excerpt, a rather famous one from the Nutcracker, music by Tchaikovsky. This is the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy. I was going to ask you about the visual aspect. What are people going to, some highlights of what people might be hit with if they haven't seen it before visually?
Yeah. Visually, it's a beautiful production. Our scenery, we bought from Ballet Met in Columbus, Ohio, and it is gorgeous. So when the curtain goes up, even during the overture, people have this beautiful show portal to look at. It's got a big nut with a nutcracker on one side and the Mouse King on the other and snowflakes around the side, and it's all gold, and it's very beautiful and ornate. And the overture for Nutcracker, you know, is like 2.5 minutes long, so it gives the audience something to look at. And I think as soon as the curtain goes up, it makes your jaw drop. We've got snow and stars outside the window and a beautiful interior of the house that has a lot of depth. The Christmas tree that grows, and then it transitions into the snow scene, which, you know, it actually snows in the snow scene. And then Act Two, the Land of the Sweets, the architecture to me looks very Byzantine. It's really beautiful with kind of some, I don't know, almost like Moorish arches. So it doesn't depict one country necessarily, though it may look Russian. I think it was designed to look like Russia. But the color and the sets and the costumes are all made to go together. And when you look at them up close, you think, those are way too many colors to have in one costume. But from far away, they're just spectacular.
Now, you don't see all the individual colors. You see the cumulative effect of it.
Right, yeah.
And this is the 35th annual production of this by Springfield Ballet.
It is, yeah. We started in 1975 was the first Nutcracker by the Springfield Ballet Company. Ballet's been in Springfield since the 50s. We had a ballet concert group and Copper Coin Ballet. And those two groups merged in 1975 to form Springfield Ballet Company. And the first Nutcracker, I was a soldier in that very first production at Springfield High School. And the only scenery I think we had was a tree. And my costume was a leotard and tights and a sash. So we've come quite a long way in that amount of time. But it's remarkable, really, in a town the size of Springfield, that we've been able to maintain such fantastic arts, the symphony and the ballet and the Muni and the theater center, such high quality. It's really something that I think the community should support.
For somebody who's been at the production, who's seen your production before, are they likely to see anything new this year?
There's always something new. Nutcracker's story is, you know, we've been basically doing it the same way for a very long time. But every year we have some new costumes, we have some new set pieces. This year we have some new magic tricks for Drosselmeyer to do. Our cannon is going to actually fire this year. We had some problems with a lot of legal, you know, brouhaha over whether you can have an explosion or smoke on stage, which kind of is not good for a production like Nutcracker where you want smoke and magic. And then everybody, the cast is always different. So we adapt the choreography for the dancers, and you know, we try to emphasize what they do well. So one of our phenomenal dancers is Sarah Jennin, who's dancing the Spanish variation. And the choreography looks exquisite on her. It's perfect for her. So I think people will be surprised. They may not come away saying, oh, you know, the Sugar Plum Fairy was my favorite part. they may say, oh, I really liked, you know, the Chinese variation or something. The Chinese variation has a dragon that's actually from Hong Kong, one of those dancing dragons. And we've got seven boys that dance with the dragon. So there's always a surprise around every corner. It's a spectacular show. It's a good length, you know, it's under 2 hours with intermission. It moves boom, boom, boom from one scene to the next. The music is all recognizable. So I think you would have to be quite the Scrooge to not enjoy the Nutcracker.
Well, this is the time for Scrooge as well, but of course he comes around, doesn't he, in the end?
He does come around, yes.
Julie Ratz, artistic director of Springfield Ballet Company. Their performances of the Nutcracker are this weekend at 2 o'clock and 8 o'clock on Saturday and at 2 o'clock on Sunday at the University of Illinois Springfield's Sangamon Auditorium. For more information, go to springfieldballetco.org, springfieldballetco.org, and there is a link to tickets. You can also call the Sangamon Auditorium box office at area 217-206-6160. And you can go to WILL's website and look up all of these programs that you hear on the station. We'll generally have them up by the afternoon of the day on which they air. Our website is will.illinois.edu, and just go to the Live and Local link right on the homepage, and you can find those. And in particular, there was more to our conversation from yesterday in which she talked about the Springfield Ballet Company's Dance in Illinois program, and I'm sorry we didn't have time to air that portion of it today, but we'll put that up on the website. Here's a look at some other events going on in our area. At the Canopy Club in Urbana tonight at 9 o'clock, the weekly appearance of The Piano Man. In Decatur, the Millikan University Children's Choir concert with the younger choirs is tonight at 5:30 at the Perkinson Music Center, Kuiper Hall, on the Millikan campus. And we'll be talking with the director of the Millikan Children's Choir on Friday about the concert by the older group on the weekend. And Love Song is at the Station Theater with the Celebration Company that opened last weekend. I had a chance to see that. We'll be talking tomorrow with Kay Bohannon Holly, who's the director of that, and two of the actors in the show that runs at 8 o'clock throughout the rest of this week, starting tomorrow and into next week as well. University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra performs tomorrow night at 7:30. At the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. And those are just some of the events you can go see and hear, and invite you to do that with as often as you can with performing arts groups in our area. It's going to be a cloudy afternoon with periods of rain mixed with wet snow or ice pellets at times. The high 38 today. Tonight, cloudy and breezy with rain changing to snow toward daybreak. The temperature nearly steady much of the night before falling to 32 at daybreak. Then tomorrow, cloudy, very windy and turning colder with occasional light snow and flurries. Total snowfall less than an inch, but with a high around 32 tomorrow morning, the temperature will slowly fall to around 20 by tomorrow afternoon. We're at 35 degrees right now. This is WILL FM and HD Urbana. Operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana. We are the listener-supported broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois.